Yerushalayim, Shema Yisrael.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive, beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations.
The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations presents The Eternal Light. This program is brought to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Today's broadcast is the first in a special series of four programs presenting the most popular Eternal Light scripts written by Morton Wishengrad. Today, you'll hear a repeat performance of Brandeis. Featured in the cast are Roger DeCoven as Justice Brandeis and Barry Kroger as the narrator.
I have a story to tell you. But you cannot understand my story unless you understand this fact. And the fact is this. Every step you take toward the future leaves behind a footprint. A footprint of the past. And there is no escape from the past. Nor should there be. For a man cannot escape his heritage. If it is good, he may redeem it. But no more. I know this. You must know it. In the year 1910, in the 54th year of his life, Louis Dembitz Brandeis knew it also. What are the things a man may not forget? I say to you that I may not forget that I am pursued by the Middle Ages like a neurotic haunted by a phantom dream. My days are warm with the memory of 3,000 years of civilization. But my sleep is fitful with the cry of 2,000 years of persecution. And both by day and by night, I am a Jew. And this is a fact sealed in my flesh like the covenant of Abraham. Now I shall tell you the story. On a day more than 35 years ago in the city of Boston, I sat in the offices of the firm of Brandeis, Dunbar, and Nutter and listened to a man with blue eyes talk to two visitors.
Mr. Kelly, what is your grievance? Why do the shoe workers threaten this strike against my client, Mr. Williams?
It's pretty simple, Mr. Brandeis. The men can't live on what they get.
Williams, is this true?
You're my lawyer, Brandeis. You know I pay my men $18 a week. For these times, it's not a bad wage.
We aren't denying that, Mr. Williams. It isn't a bad wage.
Well, you do admit that, don't you?
We admit it, sure.
Then why do you want to strike?
We need more money, that's why.
Brandeis, I told you there was no point in asking him here. The workers are unreasonable, absolutely unreasonable.
Mr. Kelly, let's be clear about this. You admit that Mr. Williams pays a decent wage.
Highest in the business, sure.
Yet you want more. Aren't you being a little unfair?
No, sir. Ask him about the two long slack seasons when the men are laid off.
Are there slack seasons, Mr. Williams?
Why, naturally. It's a seasonal industry.
But we don't live seasonal. We live 52 weeks out of the year just the same as you. Average our fancy pay over the year, and what do we get?
Mr. Williams, I'd like your figures on seasonal layoff.
Look here, Brandeis. I'm a manufacturer, not a settlement house worker.
Well, don't you think Mr. Kelly has a point to what he's saying?
Then you tell him my point. You're my lawyer. I pay you, not him. Don't forget that little thing.
I haven't forgotten it, sir. But wouldn't it be a rather unfortunate thing for a lawyer to advocate something which he can't approve as a citizen?
Listen, I hired a lawyer, not a citizen.
Well, perhaps, Mr. Williams, when you hired me, you hired both.
Did I, though?
Mr. Williams, I think perhaps you did.
All right, Mr. Citizen. You just go right ahead and sit behind this desk. Me? I'm going out to get me a lawyer.
Well, Mr. Brandeis, you talk mighty funny for a conservative.
Funny? I don't think so. There was a time when the working relationship was between a master and servant. Today, it's between employer and employee. All I want is to make both employer and employee partners. Partners to a contract.
That's still pretty radical for Mr. Williams.
So are Isaiah and Amos, Mr. Kelly. That gives me an idea. Excuse me, Mr. Kelly.
Oh, go right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Randolph.
Have you finished my holiday list?
Oh, yes, I have, sir.
Please add another item, will you? A book.
Of course, sir. For the children?
No, for Mr. Williams.
Yes, sir.
Inscribe my compliments and please send him a copy of the Bible.
Mr. Brandeis, we'll come right to the point. Whitman, suppose you do the talking.
All right, Abbott. Mr. Brandeis, a number of Boston businessmen have organized a committee. A committee that needs legal advice in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
I believe your firm represents the Great American Assurance Society?
Yes, we handle their local matters.
Do you know much about them, Mr. Brandeis?
A good deal. Why?
Abbott and I are policyholders. Pretty big policyholders. Abbott, tell Mr. Brandeis what you found.
Something pretty dirty. A few of the vice presidents have formed a syndicate. They're buying securities with treasury funds.
Well, if the securities are sound, I don't see what's wrong.
Oh, the securities are sound enough. What's wrong, though, is that they're buying the securities for themselves.
Can you prove that?
Look at this. Sworn affidavits.
They're using other people's money, aren't they?
Brandeis, we know you represent the company. We're asking now if you want to represent us against the company.
Mr. Brandeis, if this embarrasses you as a lawyer, why, tell us.
It's embarrassing, all right. I'm embarrassed to be the company's lawyer.
Then you'll take this case?
I'll be glad to, Mr. Whitman.
Fine. We're prepared to give you a retainer of $10,000.
No, Mr. Whitman.
Well, they told us you were a good businessman. We'll make it $15,000.
You don't understand. I'll take the case, but without fee. This isn't a private matter, and I don't think I have a right to charge the public for my services.
We can afford to pay, Mr. Brandeis.
All right, Whitman, I'll take half of what you're getting from this.
Why, I'm getting nothing.
Good, I'll take half of that.
Mr. Brandeis, I think I know now why your friends call you a liberal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Abbott, what do my enemies call me?
Why, what do you suppose, Mr. Brandeis?
You tell me.
Mr. Brandeis, they call you a Jew.
Louis Dembitz Brandeis smiled. To be called a Jew, it was amusing. Had not Uncle Louis Dembitz been one of the three men in 1860 to nominate Abraham Lincoln for president, had not he himself as a young man sat at the feet of Emerson and Lowell? He was the man consulted by presidents, the friend of Oliver Wendell Holmes and William Allen White, and a college president called Woodrow Wilson. Yes, it was amusing to call this tall, slender, blue-eyed man a Jew. His synagogue was the court of law. His scriptures were legal precedents. His altar was social justice. Louis Brandeis smiled a puzzled smile and then dismissed the incident. But it kept recurring.
Congratulations, Mr. Brandeis. You certainly made them crawl back into the woodwork.
I believe I did, Mr. Whitman. There's a good deal of fun in being a public servant, isn't there?
Maybe. Well, anyhow, you got yourself some free publicity in the Tribune. Listen to this. Brandeis possesses the rare knowledge of knowing when to stop. When he has exasperated his opponents to the limit of their endurance, he grows gentler than a suckling dove. I'm sorry, Mr. Brandeis.
Quite all right, Mr. Whitman. Read on.
No, let's forget it.
Please, read the rest of it.
All right. Gentler than a suckling dove and more persuasive than a secondhand clothes dealer trying to sacrifice himself to give you a bargain. That's pretty low, Mr. Brandeis.
My friends call me a liberal, and apparently those who aren't my friends call me a Jew. If you'll excuse me, Mr. Whitman, I think I'll have to talk to my friend Filene about this.
Mr.
Eileen, have you got a ready definition of a Jew?
What?
Yes, I seem to be in need of a definition.
Well, I don't know who the philosopher was, but someone is alleged to have said that a Jew is like everybody else, only more so.
Eileen, I think I ought to meet some Jews.
Why, that's a real coincidence, Brandeis. How would you like to go to New York and arbitrate a garment worker's dispute?
I wouldn't. I've got my hands full fighting the railroad trust. What's the coincidence about the New York thing?
You've heard of the ILGWU. That's quite a mouthful. It stands for the International Ladies Garment Workers Union.
What about them?
The New York cloakmakers are on strike. It happens that many of the workers and employers are Jewish.
Well?
That's your chance to find out something about the Jews. The situation shrieks for an arbitrator.
Might be interesting at that.
You call, Miss Brandeis?
Yes, please ask Mr. Dunbar if he wouldn't mind taking my notes and dictating the rest of my Ballinger-Glavis brief. I'm going to New York.
What are you talking about?
You see, Mr. Brandeis, in the union, it's a real democracy. Everybody wants to talk. Nobody wants to listen.
Mr. Deitch, if you have no objection, I'd like one of the shop chairmen to present the case.
Moskowitz, tell Mr. Brandeis.
It's very simple, Mr. Brandeis. All we want is a contract and union recognition.
I thought you were striking for higher wages and the elimination of sweatshop conditions.
Naturally, but the union comes first.
But suppose I were able to get an increase for you. Would you turn that down?
Look, Mr. Brandeis, my own boss, he isn't a bad fellow. He came to America on the same boat with me. But that doesn't make him Santa Claus. Today he feels generous, so he gives us a raise. Tomorrow his wife burns the coffee and he gives us a cut. Excuse me, Mr. Brandeis. We don't want favors. We want a union.
That's right.
That's the consensus, Mr. Brandeis. You can tell that to the employers.
Brandeis, what the workers want is absolutely out of the question.
Then you refuse to sign a contract?
We refuse to recognize the union, period.
That's too bad. I'm afraid the strike will continue.
Between me and you, Mr. Brandeis, I don't want the others to hear this. Maybe if I were a worker, I'd continue the strike.
You?
Don't you think I was once a worker? Why do you think I became an employer? Conditions in this industry are terrible.
I'm really amazed. I thought I'd heard all the answers, but this one is absolutely new.
The trouble with you, Mr. Brandeis, is that you were born in Kentucky. I'll go back and tell those idiots they can strike until they're blue in the face. In Yiddish, there's another way to say it, but you tell it to them in English.
We'll stay out, Mr. Brandeis.
Look here, you can't. Some of your people are literally starving.
If it was just for hours and wages, we'd go back tomorrow. But this is a principle. When I was a young fellow in Kishinev, I used to study the Talmud. When I came to America, I found the word I studied. They call it democracy.
Is that what the Talmud is about, Mr. Moskowitz?
They call it something else. But that's what it's about. You know, Mr. Brandeis, it's a shame. A smart man like you should learn a little Hebrew.
I think it is a shame. Someday, perhaps someone like you should teach me.
Free of charge. If you want a small lesson, here it is. Look, I'm writing.
Mm-hmm.
That's Hebrew.
It looks like a dentist's chart.
It spells a word. I'll say it for you. Tzedek.
Tzedek. What does it mean?
Justice and righteousness. Now, here's another word. Tzedokah.
Tzedakah.
It comes from the word for justice.
I see.
And it means charity. Now, that's a wonderful thing, Mr. Brandeis. In the Hebrew language, the word for charity comes from the word that means justice and righteousness. Now, please go back to those fine bosses of ours and tell them for us a little less tzedakah and a little more tzedek.
Mr. Brandeis, don't believe anything that Moskowitz says. At night, he's studying to be a lawyer.
And what is Mr. Moskowitz during the day?
He thinks he's an operator. Between you and me, he's a butcher. It'll be a fine day for my business when he gets his diploma.
What I can't understand is why your association refuses to negotiate. There's such an extraordinary amount of hostility on both sides. And yet, there seems to be much kinship and understanding.
If only those idiots would be sensible.
That's what they want you employers to be, just sensible.
Now, that's the trouble. You know something, Mr. Brandeis? When two people are enemies, it's not such a terrible tragedy. But when they're enemies because they both want the same thing, then it is a tragedy. Please, go back and see if you can talk some sense into those crazy lunatics.
Mr. Moskowitz, a wise man, knows when to yield.
With the greatest satisfaction, Mr. Brandeis. Tell him Moskowitz says he can be a wise man. I give him the honor. Let him yield.
This is the most extraordinary strike I've ever known. It's like a passage from the Talmud with both sides trying to write a commentary.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis. You know, I have a little boy. Papa, he says, what's democracy? Sonny, I tell him democracy is in the classroom, in the store where Mama buys tomatoes, in the Board of Aldermen, in the polling places. But for 10 hours a day, it's not in the shop. The boss doesn't have time for it. Please, Mr. Brandeis, tell the boss the shop is on East Broadway. East Broadway is in New York, and New York is still in America.
And so you see, I'm a little tired of being an intermediary. I've brought you both together.
Ah, like old times, eh, Moskowitz?
The association has approved an increase. Hours will be cut. Shop sanitation will be improved. Mr. Moskowitz, I think these are generous concessions.
They are, Moskowitz. We're willing to do whatever we can.
What's the catch?
See? 1 year in law school, and he wants to know what's the catch. That's what they teach in law school.
Mister, I know you from the old country. What's the catch?
The association will yield on all demands except union recognition.
Well, of course. They want to build us a fine house. The only thing they don't want is that the house should have a foundation.
Moskowitz, don't be a stubborn mule.
Mr. Brandeis, he goes to the synagogue. Let him tell me if the words are only for Saturday or if he's supposed to practice them every day.
But he does see these things. I think he's making substantial concessions.
Of course.
It's a regular merry-go-round. We want a union. We want a contract. That comes first.
Mr. Moskowitz, I think you're right about this. I recognize it as a lawyer and as an American.
You can say also as a Jew.
On whose side are you arguing?
Since it's going to cost me money, I'll argue on both sides.
Then you're willing to come to terms?
Well, maybe. But first I'll have to talk to the other employers.
Good. It's not a pleasure to be on strike.
Listen, you Talmudist, you. You've said enough. Mr. Brandeis, look at him. Do you think he's the only one who can speak a little Hebrew? Maybe I can quote a little, too. Tzion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Tzion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Don't break your teeth, Mr. Brandeis. Tzion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness.
Moskowitz, Moskowitz, with a head like yours, couldn't you be a better operator and not such a botcher?
There it is, gentlemen. This is the first collective agreement with enforcement machinery in it.
Yeah, it's a fine day's work.
Mr. Brandeis, it'll do for a start.
Gentlemen, I've learned something from you both. I'm 54 years old. All my life, I've worked for something I call justice. Social justice. I came here with curiosity, and I found that beneath all the bickering and controversy and the passion, that there was something that preachers call brotherhood. And I found it expressed. Perhaps you may not accept this, but I found it expressed in terms of Judaism. For someone like myself who hardly considered himself a Jew, that means a good deal.
This was a beginning for Louis Dembitz Brandeis. In the 54th year of his life, an idea burgeoning in a great man's mind. A man thinking, applying the scientific method,
mixing, compounding, testing the idea, formulating a concept in the crucible of his conscience. Truly, is not this the spark of divinity that makes man only slightly less than the angels? And because he was not a closet speculator, because he was a man of action, he made his decision.
Filene?
Yes?
I seem to have suddenly discovered a heritage.
Yes?
I want to be worthy of the Jewish name. It isn't wealth, it isn't station. No, nor honor, nor ambition, none of those things. It's like seeing a vision. Knowing that what is mean is not for us. Knowing that we must speak again for social justice and for righteousness, like Holmes. I would say that self-respect demands that we live not only honorably, but worthily.
But Brandeis, this is what you've tried to be all your life.
Yes, as an American. All my life I've heard people speak of Americanism and Judaism as separate from each other. I know now it's not so. Place the pattern of Americanism over Judaism. Filene, they match. Filene, a Jew is an American in the best, in the truest, in the deepest, richest sense of the word. And Filene, it makes me very proud.
What man alive has never held up a mirror to his own conscience and said to himself, "This is what I truly believe. These are the things I will not compromise. These are the banners I must carry. Without them, I have no integrity." In the summer of 1910, these ideas came to Louis Dembitz Brandeis. The ideas came. He held them in the pan of his brain. He kneaded them like dough. He placed them in the oven of his heart to bake. And when months later a rabbi came to him and spoke of Palestine, Brandeis answered,
"I am an American, Rabbi."
"So am I. We are attempting to found a refuge in Palestine for Jews who have no other land, the Jews of Middle Europe and Eastern Europe."
Can I, as an American, support such a project?"
"Because you are an American, Mr. Brandeis."
"Rabbi, I have begun to feel that to be a better American, I must become a better Jew."
"Carry it further, Mr. Brandeis. I hold that to be a good Jew, you must help to fulfill the prophetic vision for the Holy Land."
"Perhaps you're right, Rabbi. I shall have to consider it carefully. If Palestine is to have any validity, it cannot be just another small state, as a small duchy of Luxembourg or another Montenegro. It must have a purpose greater than nationalism."
"Yes. It can have that. With the help of men like yourself, I know it must."
In the 58th year of his life, virtually in the hour when President Woodrow Wilson summoned him to the Supreme Court of the United States to take his place alongside Oliver Wendell Holmes, Louis Dembitz Brandeis, jurist, moralist, liberal, Jew, American, accepted the cause of Zionism and became its leader in America. And he spoke with the words of Ahad Haam.
"I live for the sake of the perpetuation and happiness of the community of which I'm a member. I die to make room for new individuals who will mold the community afresh. When the individual thus values the community as he values his own life and strives after its happiness as though it were his individual well-being, he finds satisfaction and no longer feels so keenly the bitterness of his individual existence because he sees the end for which he lives and suffers. I am an American, and I have come to Zionism through Americanism. Let it be for what the prophets spoke. Let it be only that. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness."
Mm-hmm.
now we take pleasure in presenting Dr. Judah Golden, professor of religion at the State University of Iowa. Rabbi Golden.
To do full justice to the life of Louis Brandeis, one ought to have at least legal training, because it was through the law that this man made his principal contribution. Yet laymen may also contemplate the meaning of Brandeis' life, for the elements which he adopted in his conception of law affect the life of every citizen. It would be silly to suggest that Brandeis considered the terms of the law unimportant. Nevertheless, the fact remains that to him, law was an instrument and opportunity to serve mankind. When he was once asked for his services and told that he could fix his own salary, and it would have been considerable, Brandeis accepted the assignment but added, "I must decline to accept any salary for the reason that the burden of increased rates will ultimately be borne by the consumer through the increased cost of living mainly of those least able to bear added burdens. Any aid I can render in preventing added burdens shall be unpaid service." Brandeis is remembered in this spirit. Here in Massachusetts, Governor Tobin recently wrote to President Louis Finkelstein of the Jewish Theological Seminary, "We have a very deep appreciation of the sterling character, the extraordinary ability, and the substantial achievements of the late Justice Brandeis. It was here that he first gained recognition for his knowledge of the law. Here he first manifested his zeal for public service. Here he pioneered in the establishment of a system of savings bank life insurance that has proved a blessing to tens of thousands of men, women, and children. Through contact with Jewish working men, Brandeis rediscovered sources of Jewish tradition, the passion for justice, defiance of brutality, love of learning, and hatred of cant. Inevitably for Brandeis, this rediscovery led to Zion, to his love for it, labor for it. For from Zion had come the prophets, from Zion had come sages. And into Zion his people were now prepared to pour all their strength and their dreams. No wonder that as Brandeis rose to speak for Zionism, his face shone, Mrs. Evans reports, with an inner light that transformed his whole being.
Thank you, Dr. Golden. You have just heard Brandeis, the first in a special series of four programs featuring the most popular Eternal Light scripts written by Morton Wishengrad. The music was composed by Morris Mamorski and conducted by Milton Katims. Cantor Robert H. Siegel was heard in the liturgical music. Barry Kroger was the narrator, and Roger DeCoven appeared as Justice Brandeis. The entire production was under the direction of Ed King. This program has been a public service of the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations in cooperation with the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.